Here in bright new buildings with spacious grounds, they can live. Live with indoor plumbing, electric lights, fresh plastered walls, and the rest of the conveniences that are expected in the 20th century.
What an exciting time to be an architect. With the Second World War officially over, business was booming, cities were growing, and buildings were coming up on every city block. Architectural blueprints seemed to match this post-war optimism. Faster technology, a modern society. Reinforced concrete, glass, and steel met at clean lines. They forged simple shapes and showcased unornamented facades. For modernist architect Moshe Safdie, the beauty of these new spaces were rooted in the belief that their form expressed fitness. They were the perfect fulfillment of function. Yet the project seemed doomed from the start. After all, architectural modernism was based on a simplistic and functionalist concept of the generic user. Only certain types of bodies were imagined in these new spaces. The others seemed to be ignored. What implications did this have for the built spaces of the city? Walking the streets of Montreal in the 1960s, Jane Jacobs gives us some sense of the various social forces at play in a rapidly changing built environment.
When people doing the humble kinds of work in a city can't get access to capital, then their work itself becomes a dead end. There may be money for sophisticated technology, but at the other end of the scale, there's abysmal stultification. This is why in all North American cities today, problems are piling up unsolved. Economic and social discrimination have an awful lot to do with it.
Although we have moved beyond the simplistic and functionalist generic user of space, her observation still rings true today. Beauty, form, function. On today's show, we ask how rethinking ability and architecture offer powerful new ways to design differently. How can we move beyond the historic division of abled and disabled in order to unravel what it means to be normal? Why should we? How can we do it? And what would result from these reimagined spaces?
It is easy to literally walk through life without ever questioning the spatial design around you. Barriers to physical accessibility are ubiquitous, but are often invisible until you are directly affected by a lack of access. I must admit that this was certainly the case for me, as I never realized just how much the notion of accessibility permeated my daily life. I grew up in Southern California with my father, and between school, ballet classes, socializing with friends, at the beach, as an able-bodied person, I never stopped to think twice about the exclusive spaces that I inhabited. That is, until my father was involved in a car accident. It was only through witnessing his experience in the aftermath of the accident that I could see and feel the world around me was designed for the majority, not the universal. If you were to ask me to describe my father before the accident, the first image that would come to mind is the Roadrunner. As a single father, he was forced to embody 5 different people at once to meet all of my needs. My memories of our life while growing up consist of him running around from one space to another, agile and sprightly, enabling my exploration of the world. When I moved to Los Angeles for university, my father made the conscious choice to become even more physically active. He insisted that I needed the household car to be able to comfortably get around the city, so we began biking to work every morning and every evening, a 25-mile trajectory daily. But in 2009, at the zenith of my father's healthy and active lifestyle, as well as his personal and professional success, he was involved in a car accident that not only changed our physical life, but also our vision and understanding of the world that we inhabit. Over the last 5 years, I have watched my father struggle to reestablish a comfortable relationship with the spaces he inhabits. But what has been even more curious for me is how he has reconciled these experiences with another facet of his identity. See, while issues of accessibility only became apparent to me recently, this topic, at least in theory, is not a new one for my father. He falls into a particular category of individuals, a category of individuals who live and breathe spatial design. He's an architect.
I am Kay Garamani. I'm Amanda's father, and I am an architect. As a one member of Society of Architects, we grow up and learn and use all of the rules, including the disability rules, in different level, in different stage, in different location, which I study and act as an architect. Incorporating this rule doesn't mean that we have achieved what the disabled person has it. In the design, in general, based on mostly financial issues, this all societies which I work as an architect, they divided the project between commercial and residential. On residential, there is no fixed used rule of the disabled people, except for some very particular project. But in commercial, certain countries has certain rules that oblige architect to do it. But yet, as an architect, we have to face with the issue of disabled person, like entry, like a ramp, like accessibility, those kind in general, to manifest in our project. However, it is almost none or zero in residential, which most people live and face. This is my experience before my accident. After the accident, when first time I come back home from hospital and surgery, and faced with the stairs to go to my apartment, then I realized how important is to think about a disabled person in any way, to give them this possibility to enjoy their life in the right way. We miss that one. As an architect, we have thought, we have capacity, and we try our best. But unfortunately, the system of society is the way that mostly thinking about the financial side of an issue rather than the human side of the issue. Anyway, when I came back from hospital after my accident the first time, I faced with the stair in front of my apartment. I understood how life is difficult for disabled people. When I get inside, I couldn't use the facility. Bathroom area, kitchen area, going to patio, even walking normal inside of the home, it was hard for me. Really, at that moment, I understand how the life, normal life of disabled people are under hardship. You know, I understand that we shouldn't divide the society between disabled or not disabled. We shouldn't divide it between I can do it, they cannot do it. I have this chance, they don't have that chance. We have all work to first upgrade our knowledge, our thought about other people's, everybody in the same manner. We have to push for better life environment. And governments has a regulation rule like American Disability Act or other act for public building, commercial building, but there is no official act for residential building except certain apartment or social apartment, which they put the minimum certain number of the apartment for disabled people. Why? All should be accessible to everybody and in a right manner. The size of the corridor, the ramp, the bathroom area, the kitchen area, and in reality, we have to put this in our mind, in our thought, in our heart, that we are one person, one community, one people. And I hope that is be happen. As an architect, I try my best to incorporate all of the needs for disabled in any kind of the project. That's is my thought.
began to realize that the words we use to describe the things we feel matter. They matter for us, and they matter for those around us. Just as we draw upon words, so too do we think through life using symbols. They not only describe us, they also describe our situation. Which got me thinking, what kinds of symbols do we use to demarcate spaces of ability and disability? What do these symbols tell us about the person who is going to access that space? About the society that recognizes these symbols? Walking up Peel Street, I couldn't help but notice the bright blue handicap logos demarcating parking spots. Back in 1968, a young Danish student came up with the design as part of a competition. The original design featured a headless, inactive body in a wheelchair with arms extended outward. It was modified slightly with the addition of a head and adopted by the International Organization for Standardization to be placed on equipment around the world. 45 years later, the symbol is being redesigned, this time by a young woman from New York City. For Sarah Hendren, her new logo is designed to convey a less limited and less passive identity.
I felt like the person in that sign was not visible. I felt like the chair was more visible and that the arms of that old sign looked like machine arms instead of like a person arm.
Her new logo might not make it beyond the city, but already it's changing perceptions. The head is forward, conveying the idea that the person is the driver or decision maker of her mobility. Her arm is pointing backwards as if to suggest the dynamic mobility of chair use. White angled knockouts give the wheels life, while the chair seems to be moving against the backdrop. Just a simple idea that shifted various lines on a piece of paper, which got me thinking some more. What if we could get those same lines to move from paper to place? How can we rethink mobility and access not just in the words and symbols we use, but also in the spaces we build? In talking with my dad, I came to learn more about the groundbreaking project that is the Ed Roberts campus. I was curious. The Ed Roberts campus describes itself as a universally designed, transit-oriented campus located in Berkeley, California. The 80,000 square foot project features exhibition space, community meeting rooms, a child development center, fitness center, offices for nonprofit organizations, and vocational training facilities. It was designed and built with one key goal in mind, universal design. The idea is pretty simple. Simplify life for everyone by making products, communications, and the built environment more usable by as many people as possible at little or no extra cost.
This building expresses the idea that good design is fundamentally a social justice issue. Everyone deserves the right to a dignified and inspiring place to live and work.
For people with disabilities, the barriers in the built environment have always been a problem. Thinking about the universal design and really the goals that we were trying to achieve made me realize how important architecture and design is to full inclusion for all people.
Problem and solution, abled and disabled, normal and abnormal. Too often in our conversations with others, in the rules and regulations we craft, even in the way we think, we resort to these simple binary distinctions. But what would happen if we refused to demarcate disability as one or the other, and instead embrace the idea that disability is that force which blurs the line, which invites creativity, and ultimately gives us a chance to build anew, to design differently?
My skin is white as parchment throughout the downtown office building, where the air is tight. This town spent waiting for that macrame butter prey to come down and sing. La 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 la.